Between 1900 and 1924, 1.4 million Jews came to the U.S., mostly from Eastern Europe. With them came their culinary culture, which many outside the faith think of as Jewish food. Dishes like matzo ball soup, bagels, latkes. Our next guest reminds us of the foods cooked by Jewish people living in very different parts of the world, North Africa, the Middle East, and Southern Europe. In other words, Mediterranean Jews. Joyce Goldstein is a consultant and author. For 12 years, she was chef and owner of Square One in San Francisco. She received the James Beard Award for Best Chef in California back in 1993, and she's written numerous cookbooks, including her latest, The New Mediterranean Jewish Table. Joyce Goldstein joins us by phone from California. And Joyce, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for taking the time. And let's start with why, Joyce. Why didn't this tradition of Jewish cooking make it over to this country sooner?
Well, because the Mediterranean Jews did not emigrate to the United States in any numbers at all. They were pretty happy in their homeland, even though they might have been confined to certain areas that you might call ghettos. But they had a much more amenable life with their neighbors and didn't feel any reason to leave until after World War II, because a lot of those countries sided with the Nazis and anti-Semitism grew. Most of them ended up in Israel. Some ended up in this country. There have been some small Sephardic communities in the United States, in Atlanta and Seattle, some in Los Angeles, but not in any great number. So this food really remained mysterious. I mean, everybody knows about the Mediterranean diet and Mediterranean food.
Right.
And it's just amazing to me that nobody thought that there were no Jews there cooking, because obviously they were.
You know, I was struck in reading the introduction that you write about, you know, how many recipes were passed down orally. What kind of difficulties does that present for you when you're trying to formulate the exact ingredients, measures, and methods for any recipe?
Well, eventually I get it in some form or another, either orally from somebody in that family or how it's been written down. And it's written in shorthand. It'll say about dough, fold in the usual manner, or a mustard glass of something. And you have to figure out how many ounces were in that mustard glass, or my God, what was the usual manner that they were folding this dough?
Mm-hmm.
And that means I have to do a lot of research and see how it was done in other books that were not necessarily written by Jews, but the technique was the same or the recipe was similar. The difference between Jewish food in the Mediterranean and Mediterranean food is that Jewish food has to follow the kosher laws. No pork, no shellfish, and no dairy with meat. So those are the only requirements. And if you look at a Greek Jewish recipe, it looks like Greek food.
Hmm.
And, you know, an Italian Jewish recipe looks like Italian food. But you have to realize the social context in which it was prepared. So,
Joyce Goldstein, author of The New Mediterranean Jewish Table, is my guest. One of the first things you notice about this cookbook is the variety of herbs and spices you see in it. I mean, mint and nutmeg and saffron, allspice, or just a few. How easy is it to identify the region a dish comes from just by the combination of spices and herbs in it?
Well, if you're a food detective like I am, and you see tomato with cinnamon, you think, they could be in Greece. Or if you see caraway, coriander, hot pepper, and garlic, you think, aha, Tunisia. So you start to spot these traditional combinations of flavors, and that shows you how the recipe was prepared in that particular country. I'm putting up some preserves right now, and it's a carrot jam. I had it in Iran, and there they're using cardamom. But when I look at other versions of carrot jam for the Middle East, it might be cinnamon. So I think, all right, well, the technique is similar, but the seasoning is what distinguishes what part of the Mediterranean it's from.
You know, I'm by no means either a cook, as so many of my friends will confirm, or a religious scholar. So I have to ask, if you hadn't put the word Jewish in the title, you know, and looking at a lot of pages in this cookbook, I wouldn't have known this was a Jewish food to begin with. How intentional was that?
Well, it wasn't that it was intentional. First of all, you don't have to be Jewish to cook from this book. Anybody can cook from this book.
Yes.
But I was interested in seeing the dishes that had been adopted by Jewish families from the general culture, and seeing also what adjustments they made. Like if you're making moussaka in Greece, it has that dairy topping. Well, if you're Jewish, you can't do that because you have lamb in the dish, so you have to find another way to top it. If you're having a kebab and they serve it with a yogurt sauce. If you're Jewish, you can't do that. So then you have to figure out, well, is it going to be tahini? Is it going to be some sort of like preserved lemon mayonnaise? What am I going to do that gives me the richness of texture that I want, but not violate the kosher laws?
Hmm. Well, we have one dish from the new Mediterranean Jewish table here today, leek and cheese matzah pie, and some volunteer tasters, Stephen Steigman, Maria Carter, Dan Margulies, all gathered around the table here, Joyce. While they sample the dish, let's talk about the matzah. I mean, how different is what we get in the box from the handmade ones found in the Mediterranean area?
Well, in the old days, matzahs were considerably thicker, and most of them were round. And now ours are, you know, machine-made, and they're paper-thin. So for the recipe that you made, you're supposed to soak the matzah to soften it a little bit. Well, the old recipes will say soak for 5 minutes. If you soaked our matzah for 5 minutes, you'd have garbage. You couldn't do it. So you have to make an adjustment. It's like, what do I have to do? Because this dish, the matzah is treated almost like lasagna. It's layered with the filling, and you can't have it breaking down. So I shorten the soaking time to about a minute to a minute and a half. And sometimes they're soaked in water and then in egg. So, again, you know, when I was in Venice, I visited the Jewish bakery there, and they had the sort of similar matzahs, but they were round and they had a lot more body. So 5 minutes might have made sense, but not for ours.
Well, Joyce, we wish you were here because we're going to get a good sampling here and good reviews from our tasters, our professional tasters around the table.
I want professional tasters.
Steigy, what do you think of this leek and cheese pie you've just been devouring over
there? It's delicious. I'd never thought of the term lasagna with a leek and cheese pie, but that's kind of what it's like.
It's layered. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It is. And the Ashkenazic Jew in me will regret eating this later this afternoon.
Maria Carter from the newsroom.
Yeah, it actually reminds me of burek from like the former Yugoslavia when you had get the cheese ones. The filling is really similar to that and delicious.
Good. Dan, I'm so glad.
Dan Margulies.
I wish I had a piece right now.
Call me a matzakist. But I love it.
Oh.
Ouch.
I
do
love it. Why, Dan?
It is delicious. Unreservedly delicious.
Because why?
What is the herb in here, Joyce? Remind me. Leek.
Dill. There's some dill in
it. There's some dill in it. Yeah, it gives it some pop.
Dill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It gives it some
pop
and
nutmeg, I'm told. Yeah. Danny Alexander, the creator of this leek and cheese pie, is whispering in my ear here. You're getting pretty good reviews, Danny. This is pretty good.
Really good,
so
Danny.
Nutmeg, Dan, is the ingredient you're searching for
there,
I think. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it just is very flavorful, and it's not something you ordinarily associate with matzah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you see, we're entering Passover Friday, and Jews will be eating matzah for a week, and you better come up with some creative things to do with it, because otherwise you're going to be bored out of your mind eating matzah every day. And these layered pies are part of a Middle Eastern tradition. They also layer them with meat, like you would make a meat lasagna. And they also have these wonderful cheese and leek fillings. And I think that they could be a lovely vegetable dinner with a salad, and you'd be very happy with it.
I think it's a really good idea. Joyce, this is Stephen Steigman. I was going to tell you that as soon as this cookbook came across my shelf, I immediately thought of a Seder from a number of years ago in which I decided to kind of put aside the traditional brisket and chicken and instead go east. And I made a Doro Wat, and I made a Moroccan lamb tagine. So the first thing I did was look up and see if I could find a lamb tagine, and there it was. And
we have a few in there. Yeah.
There are. Yeah. So I'm going to make that tomorrow night. I'm also making this Persian chicken with pomegranate and walnut sauce.
Oh, that is so delicious.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, you lucky man. You're
Steigy, how come you didn't invite me to your Seder?
You're welcome to stop by, Elijah, if you'd like.
I'm doing the chicken with apricots, and I'm doing the lamb with green garlic from Turkey. I vary it every year, but my family really loves the lamb with green garlic, and it's out on market right now, so I probably will do that. But you can play with all the different recipes, and I think lamb is a lovely thing to have at the Seder and goes well with all those good kosher wines.
Well, Joyce Goldstein, you are speaking directly to Stephen Steigman. You have connected here in a powerful way, Joyce. You know, you write in the book, Joyce, that recipes must be alive and open to change, adaptation, personal interpretation. How much of that did you do with the recipes here, and why would you make a change?
Well, Americans have a fairly amped up palate. We eat Mexican one night and Thai the next. We're used to things that have more intense flavor. A lot of these recipes are lovely, but when you make them straight from the original recipe, you think, God, it just needs a little something. And that little something might be a little more onion or a squeeze of lemon or increasing the amount of cinnamon or nutmeg in a recipe. First of all, our spices are not as fresh as they are in that part of the world. If you ever walk through a spice market in Morocco, you're just blown away by the freshness and the intensity of the spices. And ours are sitting in those jars on the supermarket shelf for God knows how long. So if you double the cinnamon, you're probably getting close to what the original intention was. The other thing I did is reorganize some of the recipes so that they were more efficient. I would read these recipes and there'd be something in the third paragraph and I thought, why didn't they start with that? Why didn't they do that first? They could have even done that yesterday. But in those days, they had nothing but time to cook. You know, women weren't working outside the home.
Yeah.
And now we look at it and we think, well, I want to be efficient. I want to make this. I'm willing to put in the time. But, you know, to find something that you should have done first at the bottom of the page, it sort of makes you angry.
You know, recipes in this cookbook cover everything from appetizers to desserts, and one that made us pause and take a second look was something called cauliflower pudding, Joyce. Now, normally I see pudding and I think sweet, but that isn't going to be the case with this one, is it?
No, it's an Italian sformato. It's like a steamed pudding. It's a vegetable custard, and Italians serve them now all the time. And it's unmolded, and you can serve it with a little tomato sauce if you like. But it's a lovely first course, and I do them in little custard cups, and everybody gets one. It's quite a nice beginning to a meal, and it feels a little elegant.
A lot of research, a lot of tasting, testing recipes and tweaking them went into this. How long did it take you to get all the dishes selected and the recipes finalized and the writing done and the final version off to the publisher?
3 years of my life.
Really?
It takes a long time. Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been collecting recipes since the 80s when I had Square One and I would cook Mediterranean Jewish food for the entire week of Passover. And I did a lot of research starting then. And over the years, I've been collecting recipes and cookbooks in my travels. And finally, it seemed to me that it was time to put everything together in one big book. And in earlier times, I had done Sephardic and I had done North African Jews and Italian Jews, but I hadn't done a lot with the Jews from the Muslim countries. And of course, their food was sensational. I mean, you look at Iraq and Syria and Iran, and I mean, the food is wonderful. So this book has an additional probably 200 new recipes that were not in earlier works that I had done.
Well, Joyce Goldstein is the author of The New Mediterranean Jewish Table, Old World Recipes for the Modern Home. We sure appreciate you taking the time to visit with us today, Joyce. Thanks so much.
Thank you, and thanks for cooking.
And thanks to Danny Alexander for putting this dish together. Thank you very much.